Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Appeal for the Middle East. 2 days before he begins a pastoral visit to Lebanon, Pope Benedict urges Christians in the Middle East to be peace builders and promoters of reconciliation. Two patriarchs look forward to papal visit. We speak to the Patriarch Gregorius III, head of the Greek Melkite Catholic Church, and to the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Tual, about their expectations ahead of Pope Benedict's visit to Lebanon. And why is international religious freedom an imperative for peace and the common good? We find out more by talking to participants at a church-sponsored conference on this issue. Speaking 2 days before he begins a pastoral visit to Lebanon, Pope Benedict urged Christians in the Middle East to be peace builders and promoters of reconciliation. The Pope's appeal came at the end of his Wednesday general audience. Chris Altieri tells us more.
Speaking to pilgrims gathered for his weekly general audience, the Holy Father asked prayers for peace, reconciliation, and respect for the rights of all in the whole region. He had special prayers for the Christian communities throughout the Middle East and called on the faithful throughout the world to renew their solidarity with the Christians of the entire region.
C'est pourquoi j'exhorte tous les chrétiens du Moyen-Orient, qu'ils soient de souche ou nouveau arrivés, à être des constructeurs de paix et des acteurs de réconciliation.
I urge all Christians in the Middle East, whether native or newcomer, to be builders of peace and enactors of reconciliation, said Pope Benedict, adding, I ask God to strengthen the faith of Christians in Lebanon and the whole Middle East region, and to fill them with hope. The Holy Father went on to thank God for their presence and to encourage the whole Church to be in solidarity with them so that the Christians of the region might continue to bear witness to Christ in those blessed lands by seeking communion in unity.
Afin qu'ils puissent continuer à témoigner du Christ sur ces terres bénies, en recherchant la communion dans l'unité.
The Holy Father thanked God for all the people and all the institutions which, in many different ways, offer assistance to the struggling faithful of the region.
L'histoire du Moyen-Orient nous enseigne le rôle important et souvent primordial joué par les différentes communautés chrétiennes dans le dialogue interreligieux et interculturel.
The history of the Middle East, said Pope Benedict, teaches us the important and often critical role played by the various Christian communities in interfaith and intercultural dialogue, concluding with a prayer that God grant the region the peace it so desires in respect for legitimate differences.
Que Dieu bénisse le Liban et le Moyen-Orient. Que Dieu vous bénisse tous.
God bless Lebanon and the Middle East, he prayed. God bless you all. I'm Chris Altieri.
Earlier during his general audience, the Pope continued his catechesis on prayer in the Book of Revelation. He said that prayer enables us to discern the events of history in the light of God's plan for the spread of his kingdom.
In prayer, we see that Christ's final victory over sin and death is a key to all history. While giving thanks for this victory, we continue to beg God's grace for our earthly journey. Amid life's evils, the Lord hears our prayers, strengthens our weakness, and enables us to trust in His sovereign power. The Book of Revelation concludes with Jesus' promise that He will soon come. And the Church's ardent prayer, come, Lord Jesus.
The Pope ended by saying, in our own prayer, and especially in our celebration of the Eucharist, may we grow in the hope of Christ's coming in glory, experience the transforming power of His grace, and learn to discern all things in the light of faith. As we heard earlier, Pope Benedict arrives in Lebanon this Friday for a 3-day pastoral visit. during which he will present his apostolic exhortation, a document of reflections based on the deliberations of the 2010 Special Synod of Bishops for the Middle East. During his trip to Lebanon, the Pope will meet with representatives of local Christian and Muslim communities and address political and cultural leaders in the capital. One of his first engagements on Lebanese soil will be a meeting with the Patriarch Gregorius III, head of the Greek Melkite Catholic Church, who told me that Pope Benedict's visit to the nation this week is a very significant and eagerly awaited event.
Well, the visit itself is very, very important. You know, some people are saying he is not coming, so we are happy that he is coming. That is the most important thing, and the visit has to be done. It is a wonderful and special historic visit, an event for the whole country. It is a visit to Lebanon, which is called by late Pope John Paul. Lebanon is a message, so it is a real visit to the message Lebanon, and from Lebanon, a message for the whole Middle East.
And what message would you like to hear from Pope Benedict?
Well, first, the message itself is an exhortation of His Holiness with the title Communion and Witness, which is a real program for the whole church and churches of the Middle East, Catholic, alike, Orthodox, Protestant communities, and also for the whole Middle East population, 350 million in the whole Middle East, mostly Muslims, all of them are waiting this message first as a testimony and as a communion. A communion, it means a church united, a church strong, a church happy in this faith. And communion, it means to be witness, it means this church is able and capable to give this message to all citizens in Lebanon as well as in the Middle East.
Now, this visit is being overshadowed, of course, by the conflict in neighbouring Syria. Do you believe that the papal visit will help in any way to bring peace and reconciliation to Syria? And if so, in what way?
Well, it is surely a very important event. In this situation, it is a real message also of peace. Don't forget the Holy Father spoke in these about 18 months of crisis in Syria for about 12 or 15 times about Syria and calling for dialogue, for peace, for reconciliation, and so on. So this visit is a visit really for Lebanon, but it is also a visit for Syria, for and so on. And we hope that some of our children or faithful from Syria will come. Anyway, all bishops of Syria, Catholic Church, will come to be in the visit, and also some faithful young people, nuns, priests, monks, and also some Muslims, I think, will come to join the Lebanese to be there for the visit. And I think it is an appeal, this visit of the Holy Father, to tell Syria the love of the Holy Father and his wish that all Syrians come together to a common world of peace, of reconciliation. This is very important. I think the Holy Father will give, I think, an address, as he always did, where he will flying over the country, he will give a message to Syria, and it will be very welcomed in Syria as well as in Lebanon.
Are there, though, real fears among people in Lebanon that the conflict in Syria could spill over into Lebanon?
Well, we have a historic link between Syria and Lebanon since centuries. So what happens in Syria, what happens in Lebanon is always in a way related. The people are related. There are many families. The same families are in Lebanon, in Syria. They are made, they are business, continual, nothing. Lebanon is, let us say, the road to Syria and from Syria to the whole Middle East Arab countries. So what happens in Syria can always have and had always in the history an influence in Lebanon. But we hope that this influence, this link, will be a positive one. And we pray that Lebanon will help also Syria to overcome this crisis.
How would you describe relations between Christians and Muslims in Lebanon?
Well, Lebanon is a model through the history of a conviviality of all citizens. There are about 18 different communities in Lebanon, and they, all of them, have their share in the government, in the parliament, in different ministries, and so on. It is a real good participation, sharing, and in a peaceful way, and in a constitutional way. This is to say, a solidarity in the constitution itself. That is very special in the whole Middle East. Therefore, I think it is also a model of democracy, of freedom, of real happiness, and all Arab countries like to come to Lebanon to have the style of life of Lebanon. In this sense, I think Lebanon remains always a message for the whole Arab countries.
Finally, one last question. Of all the various challenges that are facing the Catholic Church in the Middle East, what do you personally believe is the greatest or the most serious?
Well, the challenge is for the Church to understand her mission in the Middle East. And this is the very substance and essence of the whole Synod for the Middle East in October 2010, and also the content and the meaning of the exhortation the Holy Father will give us is how the Church can understand her role as a church. As John Paul II said in his last letter in 2005 for the Day of Peace in January 2005, the essence of human being is to be with and for. So the Church, and I understand the mission of the Church in the Middle East, is to be a church in the Middle East, but also for the whole population of the Middle East. We are the only one Christian church in the world who can give a testimony for the Lord, for Jesus, for the values of the Gospel as light, as salt, and as given in the Middle East. So our mission is to be for this Middle East, the cradle of Christianity, and to be able to be Christian with others and for others.
I was speaking to Patriarch Gregorius III, head of the Greek Melkite Catholic Church. Another church leader who is awaiting the Pope's message of hope during his visit to Lebanon is the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fouad Toual, who spoke to my colleague Tracy McClure.
I think there is some relation between some ideas in the Instrumentum Laboris and what was wanted in this Arab Spring. If we can speak about the big themes like freedom, liberty, work, occupation, and so on, we mentioned all this during our synod, but the fact that after this, the international community and the politics come in with this Arab Spring and wasted all the good idea and all the good aspiration, hopes that we have had from this Arab Spring. In the beginning, we were all agreed with this Arab Spring. We wanted it. We encouraged it. We gave our blessing, but what we saw after that was not the same Arab Spring that we hoped to have.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
We hoped during our synod, as we hoped from the Arab Spring, to have more freedom, more work, more dignity, more democracy, more freedom of conscience, and so on.
Yes, those were some of the main points that the bishops brought up there at the synod. They wanted to see a greater recognition of the contributions of Christians to the societies in the Middle East, and they wanted to see also the equal civil rights for Christians. Do you think perhaps we're going to be seeing more of this become a reality in the Middle East after the Arab Spring?
No. It is total chaos, really, and we cannot judge now where we are going. Until now, we are living a total chaos, a total moment of transition, and we are not sure what is waiting us in the future, whether in the Middle East, whether in Syria or elsewhere. We saw the example of Libya, the example of Egypt, and we are not sure about the result of the spring. So in the beginning, everything was good, hopefully, and so on. Then with this politic, it is politic of interest without so much ethic. That's why really we are not very sure about the result.
Now, during their synod, the bishops put a lot of emphasis on the precarious situation of Christians in the Holy Land and called for international support for peace initiatives to resolve decades of conflict and tension there. Now, with the spotlight on the Arab Spring, it's being put elsewhere in the Middle East and North Africa. So how central is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict to peace in the region as a whole? And what hopes do you have that it will be resolved in our lifetime?
No, really, I'm sorry to say that with the situation in Syria, the attention of the world, the attention of the mass media is more focused on Syria and not on us. We can say we are a little bit forgotten, because the focus of the world and the mass media and the politicians is more about Syria than about our situation in the Holy Land.
Patriarch Twal, what then are the Christians in the Holy Land there hoping that will come out of Pope Benedict's visit to the region?
Well, in the beginning, we were asked whether he will come or he doesn't come, because the situation in Syria can have a negative impact in Lebanon. We said he must come, the Pope must come, and the delegation, they are the most welcome to come. I'm sure that his visit will encourage us, his visit will, he will for sure deliver a speech, not only for Lebanon, but for all the Middle East, for all the Christians and the Muslims. So we are waiting this speech. That must be a message for us, for the government, for the Middle East, for the region. We are waiting, we are preparing. We will be there, four bishops from the Holy Land, from the Patriarchate with other four priests. Might be some two groups, one from Israel and one from Jordan, will join us in Beirut in this occasion. So we are preparing ourselves. We wait.
That was the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fouad Twal, speaking to Tracy McClure. Notre paisible terre, vraie image du Liban. International religious freedom, an imperative for peace and the common good. That's the title of a conference jointly sponsored by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, Catholic Relief Services, and the Catholic University of America that was taking place in Washington on Wednesday. Among the participants attending the one-day conference was Bishop Richard Pates of Des Moines, chairman of the U.S. Bishops' Committee on International Justice and Peace. I spoke to him just before the conference got underway and asked him to explain why the subject of their discussions was so important and so timely.
The importance and timeliness of this seminar is because of the fact that Cardinal Dolan and the leadership of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops have focused very strongly on the question of domestic religious liberty because of some of the problems that we have incurred with regard to the administration here in the United States. And so, therefore, we want also to take a very significant look at the issue with regard to international justice and peace, also as a counterpart to what we're trying to achieve here. And Cardinal Dolan specifically has asked that we concentrate both not only on domestic religious liberty, but also international justice and peace and international liberty.
When it comes to domestic religious liberty, you are presumably referring to the controversy over the federal health care mandate requiring most religious employers to provide health care insurance cover for contraceptives and abortion-inducing drugs and sterilizations. And I know that this case is still going through the law courts as we speak. How hopeful are you that it could lead to an overturning of this?
Well, we're very hopeful because of the fact that it's been introduced in several jurisdictions. And I think the issue is certainly related to religious liberty to health and human services mandate, but also There are four or five other instances, migration and refugee services, where similar issues and a pattern has developed with regard to the denial of religious liberty throughout kind of our system. So we're very positive, hopeful that it will go through the judicial system, but also we're still trying to work with the government itself, President Obama's government, and also we're taking legislative remedies too. So all three are in play, but we are very hopeful about the court cases.
Okay, looking beyond this issue, what other threats to religious freedom do the bishops see in the U.S. at this moment?
Well, we would see just the culture of the country in terms of a kind of a liberal orientation, whereby the issues with regard to the moral issues are certainly front and center. You know, the imposition of moral prerogatives that we really feel are important to live. We see the issue with regard to same-sex marriages. We see the issue with regard to the hiring and granting of certain different opportunities for different agencies that they place on that, the fact that they have strings attached, that they have to implement certain moral perspectives that we are completely in disagreement with.
Okay, let's move on now to the international situation, where indeed threats to religious freedom there are often threats to a person's life or physical safety. Take, for instance, Iraq and Nigeria, which have been discussed at this seminar. How worried are you about events in those two countries?
Well, we're very concerned about them. You know, I think it's developed over time in Iraq, and particularly because of the American invasion, that we feel a very special responsibility there. But religious freedom, I believe everybody will concur, has deteriorated since Saddam Hussein was overthrown. And so we're trying to work with the people of that country and also international agents, Archbishop Chilicut, and also international agents, Archbishop Chilicut, the Apostolic Nuncio and Permanent Observer of the Holy See at the United Nations, is going to speak on that particular topic. And then Nigeria, of course, would be less. There's certainly Boko Haram and some very serious terrorist organizations operative there. So we recognize the problems, significant problems, but I think we have to understand that they need to be addressed with some forethought and understanding and organizations.
The third country where, let's say, the issue of religious freedom is going to be discussed is Cuba. Now, this is a country where the, shall we say, intolerance towards religion comes not so much from the culture, but from the communist government. And, of course, that's the case in several other communist countries around the world. However, the restrictions against religion in Cuba at least have lessened somewhat of late. Do you believe that this liberalization trend will continue, or do you think it will remain difficult for religious believers in the foreseeable future?
Well, I had the opportunity to be in Cuba when the Holy Father was there, and our impression, of course, is that it's a movement, a positive movement, and that you know, religious liberty has become more and more a feature of the country itself and of the culture, that it's definitely on the rise. And I think that the next to the government itself, that the most important institution in Cuba today is the Catholic Church. So I think it's going to continue to rise positively.
What are, in practical terms, the most important restrictions on religious practice in Cuba that still remain in place?
Well, I think the ability to speak in the public square, to take a position with regard to counter the government itself. In other words, some of the restrictions of the government, there's not free speech particularly vibrant in Cuba at this point in time. So I think just the basic religious freedom to see that you not only are able to worship, not able to organize and that sort of thing, but also to speak. And I think also the implementation of Catholic schooling system throughout the country would be important also.
One very last question. So what do you hope this seminar will achieve?
Well, I think what we want to achieve is just awareness, that people see that indeed throughout the world this is a particularly important issue, that we're very grateful there will be a number of participants who will come from the State Department of the United States, and I think it's drawing a very significant crowd of players in these issues today that can make a difference. And so I think it calls achievement to that, and also I think speaks to the fact that the Catholic Church is very much important in dedicating a lot of interest to this particular human right across the board, regardless of one's religious affiliation, that this is a human right, that this is necessary for all of us to be able to make sure that it exists in all of our different countries, put the pressure on these countries.
Another of the participants at the conference was John Garvey, president of the Catholic University of America. Why was it decided to hold this seminar on this particular theme? Is it because you believe that there are growing threats to religious freedom around the world?
I think that that's true. There are a number of areas that the seminar will focus on, in particular Nigeria, Iraq, and Cuba. But our own issues of religious freedom in the United States, which are of a very different order, I think have focused our attention on the subject generally and brought attention, more attention to international affairs than we sometimes show.
Coming to international affairs, Pakistan is a country that often springs to mind when thinking of the theme of religious freedom, especially in the wake of the recent, very highly publicized case involving a 14-year-old Christian girl with mental disabilities who was jailed for several weeks under the country's controversial anti-blasphemy laws. Is this, to your mind, symptomatic of a very disturbing trend in certain countries?
I don't know whether it will amount to a trend or not. It's certainly disturbing, and it is reassuring that some action has been taken to release that young lady. You know, there, I think that the threats that we're seeing to religious freedom are of two kinds, some of them led by the state, and then others by private groups like Boko Haram in Nigeria or the recent violence we've seen just in the last couple of days in Iraq that stem, I think, from a culture of religious intolerance.
Now, we've talked about these countries like Iraq and Nigeria, where the threat to a minority community can often be for their lives or at least their physical safety. But then there are other nations like the US, for example, where the threats to religious liberty are less extreme. You know, nobody's likely to die. But nonetheless, the church has been talking up about, you know, the growing marginalization of religion, the intolerance of talking about religion, perhaps in the public sphere. Is this something of deep concern to many Catholics in the US?
It's very concerning to us in the United States. There is a kind of intolerance that rose up in secular societies where religion over time becomes just something that's not important in people's lives, and the government becomes less concerned with it and gives it second or third place behind other policies.
I was speaking to John Garvey, president of the Catholic University of America, and earlier you heard the voice of U.S. Bishop Richard Pates of Des Moines.
If you have an Android smartphone, then visit our website and download Vatican Radio's first app. It's free. The application contains an agenda that lets you access text and audio content associated with the Pope's public events, while informing you in real time about papal celebrations broadcast live. A news service provides the latest information on the Church and the world, while a radio section links you to Vatican Radio's 5 audio channels and its 40 different language services. Audio, video, text, news, editorials, live broadcasts, all in a single app. Go to our website at www.radiovaticana.va and click on the icon in the upper right-hand corner. The version for iPhone and iPad is coming soon.
Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English program. But we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programs on the internet at www.radiovaticana.va. Laudato Jesus Christus.